Very nice to see you all again. Hope everybody is well. Yes?
Yes.
Good. I feel at home here. This is my name.
You can stay.
Thank you very much. I'll take the penthouse at the top of the tower. So yesterday we had a grand festival. Hari Bol! And it was the 13th day, the Trayodashi, which means today is the 14th day. The 14th day of the bright fortnight of the month of Shravan. Shravan Mas, Trayodashi Titi, Shukla Paksha, which means today, 14th day of the month, is Rasmangala. Must be therefore a full moon, because there are 28 days in a month. Don't believe the propaganda that there's 30 and 31 is all bogus. If you calculate on 28 days, and that means half of the month, the moon is getting bigger, half of the month, the moon is getting smaller. So we calculate. So the moon has been getting bigger. Shukla Paksha means the right fortnight. Bigger, 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 until tonight. It is a wonderful, golden moon. And we remember Balaram. Because today, 5,000 and about 180 years ago, I will be corrected on that by the end of class, all you iPadders out there. But about that, the Lord appeared in this world. I've been given a verse today, and by the providence, by fate, let us see if the verse has anything remotely to do with what Balaram. I had a choice. I could either have no verse or a verse. A random verse. Pick a card, any card. Pick a verse, any verse. Is this your verse? Yes. So this is the verse. Let us see. Since all things are ultimately connected to Krishna, and Krishna is primary expansion is Lord Balaram. You would think that every single verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita was connected to Lord Krishna, Chaitanya, or Nityananda, Mahajan, Rama, Balarama. So let's have a look and we will see. Can someone help me?
So yes, now, Madhya
2347. Okay, thank you. 2347. Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai.
Premadika Sai Baba Samagri Milane.
Premadika Sai Baba Samagri Milane.
Krishna Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Rupe Paya Pariname.
Krishna Bhakti Rasa Rupe Paya Pariname.
Premadika Sai Baba Samagri Milane.
Premadika Sai Baba Samagri Milane.
Bhakti rasa rupe paya pariname.
Krishna bhakti rasa rupe paya pariname.
Prema adika.
Prema adika.
Love of Godhead.
Love of Godhead.
Beginning with Shanta, Dasya, and so on.
Beginning with Shanta, Dasya, and so on.
Stai bhava.
Stai bhava.
The permanent ecstasies.
The permanent ecstasies.
Samagri Milane.
Samagri Milane.
By mixing with other ingredients.
By mixing with other ingredients.
Krishna Bhakti.
Krishna Bhakti.
Devotional service to Lord Krishna.
Devotional service to Lord Krishna.
Rasa Rupe.
Rasa Rupe.
Composed of transcendental mellows. Paya.
Paya.
Becomes.
Becomes.
Pariname.
Pariname.
By transformation.
By transformation.
Translation. When the permanent ecstasies, neutrality, servitorship, and so on, are mixed with other ingredients, devotional service in love of Godhead is transformed and becomes composed of transcendental mellows. Let's repeat. When the permanent ecstasies, neutrality, servitorship, and so on, are mixed with other ingredients, devotional service in love of Godhead, is transformed.
Is transformed
and becomes composed,
of
transcendental mellows.
Of transcendental mellows.
Purport. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.1.4-5, the following definition is given. Atasya keshava ratir lakshitaya nikaya de samagri pariposhena paramarasa rupata vibhavaya anubhavaischa satvikaya vabhichari di Svadhyatvam kriti bhaktanam anita shravanadi esha krishna rati svai bhavo bhakti raso bhagat. Love for Krishna, Keshava, as previously described, reaches the supreme state of being composed of mellows when its ingredients are fulfilled. By means of vibhava, anubhava, satvika, and vyabhichari, hearing and chanting are activated, and the devotee is able to taste the love for Krishna. Then attachment for Krishna, or permanent ecstasy, sthayi bhava, becomes the mellow of devotional service. Bhakti rasa. Om jnana timalandasya, jnana jnashakaya, chakshurin maitam jnana, asmanash jiri vrede manam. So yesterday, we had a big fayagya, and it was to do service. It was to do service for a family celebration. The ingredients that you bring for such a yagya are known as the samagri. And samagri means wood, ghee, 17 different types of herbs and seeds that we put into the fire, and various other things, mantras, of course, need to be there. You can't have a fire yagya without wood. You can't have a fire yagya without wood plus ghee. You can't have a fire yagya with wood plus ghee plus mantras. You need all of them. And then they become transformed by the process of what looks like mundane burning, but they actually become transformed into an offering. So this verse, my understanding of this verse, is that there are various ingredients in devotional service to the Lord, such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Krishna Smaranam, etc. But when the ecstasies take place, and these ecstasies are the special ingredients that are added to the other ingredients of hearing and chanting, studying, serving the Vaishnavas, and so on, and so on. You can either count, Bhaktivinoda Thakur counts 64, and then he reminds us that Jiva Goswami says, actually, out of the 64 processes or ingredients of serving Krishna, actually, there's just 9. So of all the 64, accepting the spiritual master, living in Mathura, he says, actually, it all boils down to this. Lord Chaitanya says, it all boils down to these 5. And then Jiva Goswami says, actually, if you do the 9, or really any one of the 9, then you are, that's the chief ingredient. But because we can't concentrate most of the time on just one of the 9, we spread it out. Therefore, we have festivals like Balaram Jayanti. Because these festivals stimulate us in ways that are different from yesterday. Therefore, we have samskaras, because samskaras stimulate us in a different way than the day when there was no samskaras. Therefore, we go on pilgrimage, because pilgrimage stimulates us in a way that living at home and doing devotional service doesn't. So, we're very changeable. We're possessed by the desire for newness and novelty. We like to go, to a different place to see something. In Tibet, they say that the best spiritual master is always the one that you can never visit. The best spiritual master is one who lives three valleys away. And in Tibet, three valleys is a very, very long way away. But because he's a long way away, wow, he must be so advanced. Meanwhile, three valleys away, someone is thinking, wow, I wish I could be in, that other place where you live, thinking that he must be so advanced. So in this way, the mind becomes harnessed to Shravana and Kirtan by harnessing the tendency of the mind to do different things, or to do the same things differently, or to do the same thing differently with different people, or to do the same thing differently with different people with different ingredients. Hence we go to Mayapur. I was just on a summer camp with Hari Sori in Slovenia, and he told the story that Rameshwar, in the early days, when Prabhupada had asked for devotees to go to Mayapur once every year, was the temple president, he won't like this. Prabhupada had asked the devotees to go to Mayapur once every year. What did he say? After a year's preaching. So if you preach particularly, to go to Mayapur to become spiritually refreshed. So Rameshwar, he had gone to Prabhupada and laid before him, that perhaps this was a little too expensive, and this was actually going to cost about $750,000 to bring all the devotees, just from America, to Mayapur for the annual corporate income. So Prabhupada listened, because he usually listened to Rameshwar, because he'd increased the book distribution and he'd done so many things for him. And when we think of book distribution in ISKCON, we should not only think of Srila Prabhupada, but we should think of Tamal Krishna Goswami, and we should also think of Rameshwar, who did so much. So here's him sitting in front of Prabhupada, and he said, I think if the book distributors come only once a year, then it will be too much, too expensive. Prabhupada listened very carefully. He said, no. Every year. Every year they must come. He said, expense or no expense, bring them. Now, he said that about preachers. So you find a quote which says that every single devotee must go to Mayapur once every year. But the principle was that if you're dealing with material energy as a preacher does, and having to really work hard, then going to another place to get the same Maha Mantra, to be in the same Kirtan, but to just be in a fresh place. This is something different. So for all of us coming here to celebrate a festival here, this is a great inspiration for us from England. So we do these different types of devotional service. And all of these ingredients, all of these samagri, are connected to Lord Balaram. There, I did it. You see? I thought I got that. Because Lord Balaram is none other than all the ingredients of paraphernalia and the attitudes and the procedures for becoming a pure devotee of Krishna and feeling the ecstatic symptoms that I mentioned in this verse. Not only that, but Lord Balaram is also the original guru, Adi Guru. We call him the Adi Guru. Because the guru's function is to direct you to Krishna. He's just pointing the finger. He's not Krishna, but he points the finger to Krishna. So Lord Balaram is always, when he's not busy leaning on Krishna, he's encouraging everyone to take shelter of Krishna. So why is that? Let's delve a little deeper into Balaram Thakur. But don't expect too much, please. I'm a bit tired this morning. Please be nice to me. Don't ask me what Balaram's relationship with Radharani is, please. Prabhupada said that is one of the nonsense, rascal questions. What is Balaram's relationship? And you do not need to know that question. We don't do that these days. Prabhupada did that very regularly. The very first time I saw Prabhupada give a class, somebody asked him, I thought It was a perfectly reasonable question. I thought, oh good, I've always wondered about that. I'm so glad someone else made themselves look a little bit vulnerable. Prabhupada now is going to answer that question that I've always wanted to ask. So when she asked that question, he said, you do not need to know the answer to that. That is not important. So you would think that a person being just get out of my sight, foolish. You would think a person would say, okay, that's it, I'm going, I'm out. I waited 9 years to ask my question to the guru. And he told me it was not a very important question. I'm off. But no, once these spiritual ecstasies, which are real, actually, they are real, and Prabhupada actually confirmed for us. And I don't think it was just flattery. I don't think Prabhupada was saying things just to flatter his young disciples. Because given the way that, ISKCON often takes away every possible last crumb of sense purification in some places, and yet devotees stay very determined to serve Krishna, they must actually be experiencing something. I hope they do, because I'm inspired by what they do. So if everything is fake, then it's a big problem. So somebody somewhere must be experiencing spiritual ecstasy in the sangha of the devotees of Krishna. Otherwise we're all cheating each other. I hope that's not the case, because I'm working on behalf of an organization which is a mutual cheating organization. I don't think so. I think somebody somewhere must be happy because some of these ecstatic feelings are becoming manifest within them. Must be. So, yesterday, leading on, we chanted what we were able to from the Purusha Sukta. And the Purusha Sukta is part of the Rig Veda, and it asks a rhetorical question. It says, Eta vanasya mahima ato jaya gamsya purusha padosya vishvabhutani triparasyam ritam divi. He said, is this everything? That's the question. Is this everything that there is? As I look around me, is this everything? That Almighty God has just created what I see in front of me? I don't think so. I think there must be something else. I think this is only a small portion of the Lord's manifestation. And that's true. And elsewhere in the Upanishads, we find that this, if we can get our heads around this one, that this is one quarter of infinity. But the Vaikunthas are three quarters of infinity. And I'm looking at Rasamandala, who is a qualified mathematician, and he's just about to raise his hand and say, excuse me, you can't have a quarter of infinity. And by definition, therefore, you cannot have three quarters of infinity. It just doesn't work. This is the Upanishadic statement. This is to give our tiny minds. One time, a Welsh devotee who joined in Cardiff, whose name was Narahari, he asked Srila Prabhupada back to the Antiman, and he said, Prabhupada, he said, how do we understand, oh, I won't try and do the Welsh. How do we understand? He said that Mahavishnu is breathing out universes. And Prabhupada looked at him and he just shook his head and said, you will never understand with your puppy brain. Now, the ISKCON guru-disciple relationship is often one of mutual flattery. Because the guru knows if I don't flatter my disciple, I'm only here once every 2 years. There can't be no relationship at all. So let me flatter my disciple, and the disciple flatters the guru. There's none of this disciple squashing. But it was almost as if Prabhupada did not care whether you were his disciple or not. He wasn't really bothered. If you accepted Krishna consciousness as he taught it, you were his disciple. If you didn't, then that's all right. But he's not going to stop teaching Krishna consciousness as it is just because you find it difficult or because it affects your precious image of yourself. So Prabhupada was very, cruel to be kind, we say. I gave an analogy the other day, because the class was over the internet, someone wrote in and very outraged that I could even say such a thing. But when you're not in the room, you can't. I was talking about how they train Shaolin monks, and the guru sometimes during their meditation or during their exercises, he whips them with a bamboo. And someone wrote to me from another Gaudiya camp, and he said, "I am outraged. How can you ever say that the guru would ever, ever whip his disciple with a bamboo?" So I wrote back and I said, "Well, you know, you didn't quite understand what I was saying. I was using that as an analogy to say that the relationship between the guru and disciple is one of correction." You know, Prabhupada said, "One hand inside the pot, one hand outside the pot, the brass pot with a little hammer inside the pot, supporting, outside the pot, tapping." And you make a sheet of metal into a brass pot that the ladies carry on their head. That's how they used to do it, just little taps. If you tap too much and there's no internal support, then the pot collapses. If there's lots of internal support but there's no tapping, no shaping, you will never reach the shape of the pot. So the guru has to do two things, one from the outside, one from the inside. Support, encouragement, guidance, affection, love within the disciple's heart. And outside, bamboo. If this is going out on the internet and you still cannot understand it, outraged at Tunbridge Wells, please write again. And I will, those of you who are not from England, let that go over your head. Okay. So the Upanishads take great pains to describe that, a unit of happiness of a, is he here today? He's not here today. Anyway, the unit of a young married man, just married, who is a prince, who marries a princess. The unit of that man is one. The unit of enjoyment. If that unit of enjoyment is one, then the next unit of enjoyment is those in the heavenly planets. And that is 100. Multiply that by 100, we come to different lokas. And so the Upanishads describe the different lokas. Above that, Brahmaloka. Above that, 100 times 100 times 100 times 100 times 100 of happiness is the happiness of the Atmarama, the self-realized soul, someone who has attained enlightenment, described in the Bhrigu Valley portion of the Taittiriya Upanishad. And when he gains his enlightenment, the sage says, well, in Sanskrit he says, "Wow." That's what he says. Wow. So when you gain enlightenment, when you actually understand, I was never born, I will never die, I am eternal, there's no such thing as suffering. Wow. So in Sanskrit it's ha-u, 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 ha-hamannam, 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 aham tam shloka kriti. Anyway, that's what he says. So he says, I have just gained enlightenment, and these are my... So his bliss is 100 times 100 times 100 times 100 times 100. But that bliss is the amount of bliss in rainwater in the hoofprint of a calf compared to the ocean of bliss that is experienced by the liberated Nityasuri Vaishnava. How amazing. How amazing. Even just to experience a drop of that bliss on the road of bhakti yoga is enough to keep us going for the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And that's the only way, really, that you can remain a devotee for a long time. It's just you've got to get some nectar sometime. Not that we should just be nectar junkies. That's like the bhakti yoga equivalent of eating, super sweet halva with whipped cream and cherries on top. It's fantastic. But you can't do it every meal. So just to go hunting the nectar, this is not good. Sometimes you have to work. You have to work hard. And it's not that every day is going to be blissful. But someday we get a, what is it known as? A spurti, a little glimpse, a little drop, something that keeps us going to the next stage, and that is the Balaram Kripa. Because Balaram is always inviting us to come back to Krishna in the form of his different expansions and his different representatives. So the Guru is also the expansion, of the expansion of the expansion of Balaram. So, let us go on. We find in the Svetashvatara Upanishad, are you okay so far? I haven't started telling Balaram stories, I do apologize. But I will. There's no breakfast. So if you indulge me, I can carry on speaking. If you look bored, then I will stop. This is Svetashvatara Upanishad. Tamishwaranam paramam maheshwaram, tam daivadanam paramam cha daivadam, patim patina paramam parastar, vidhama devam bhuvaneshamidyam. You are the Supreme Lord, controlling even other lords like Brahma, Shiva, and so on. You are the highest divinity. Even the king of the demigods, Indra, is subservient to your will. You are the maintainer of powerful kings and progenitors. You are superior to all superlative truths. We know you as the ultimate object of all prayers and eulogies, the supreme personality who keeps on performing wonderful pastimes. Krishna has many energies, just like the sun has many sunbeams, sun rays. They're always expanding from the sun. You can be anywhere in the world and you can catch a few. And Krishna has his internal potencies, his marginal potencies, and his Maya Shakti that he manifests. And by the Lord's inconceivable potency, differences and varieties are exhibited within and between these categories. So it's not that we have to think that Krishna only has three of something or six of something. Actually, they're infinitely, but they're graded into three and six for our convenience. So if Krishna expands to form three quarters of infinity, the entire manifestation, then we have everything, just everything. Think of everything that you can think of. That's very hard to do. Arjuna couldn't do it except he had to have divine eyes. Divya drishta. I give you divine eyes so that you can not only think of everything in existence at the same time, but also see everything in existence at the same time. It's very hard to do. We've just got two eyes, and usually we're preoccupied with what we see in front of us. We're really just scavenging for food, breath, water, you know, a little respect, maybe, a little clothing, maybe, you know, some, you know, wealth. This is really just thinking of the next day. So, according to different gunas, of course, the man in the mode of ignorance is thinking of Friday afternoon when he gets paid. The man in the mode of rajaguna is thinking of, you know, the end of the month when he gets his salary. It's the difference between wages and salary. And really rich man, he doesn't think of this. He's thinking of his annual income. Annual income, it just dribbles in. And a great sage is thinking of the well-being of the entire planet. They say the Catholic Church thinks in terms of centuries. You know, there's a group of people sit down in the Catholic Church and think, okay, what are we going to do over the next 100 years? What are we going to do over the next 100 years? See? But the demigods are thinking, and the great Vaishnavas are thinking, what are we going to do for the salvation of the world over the next 200, 300, 400, 500 years. So when you get an acharya of the scale of Srila Prabhupada, a lot of what he did was not for you, not for me, and not for any of us. It wasn't for ISKCON, it wasn't for a tiny fledgling temple, not for the 100 temples that he started. It was for the world. Because you, me, and everyone today has no comprehension whatsoever of how far the teachings of Krishna consciousness are going to spread. No comprehension. You cannot believe it. You cannot believe it. I've been alive as a devotee for 40 years. This week, I'm coming up to my 40th anniversary of my first kirtan.
Hooray!
Viva!
Hooray!
Hooray! I told the devotees, because we were sitting in a tent in the rain in Slovenia, and they were looking a little apologetic, you know, that they brought this devotee to speak to 20 devotees in a white plastic tent in the rain in a soggy farmer's field. I didn't even know where I was. I don't even know where Slovenia is. I'm so Britain-centric. For me, coming to Belgium is like, you know, going to Bangkok or something. So I said, don't worry. I said, I discovered Krishna consciousness by sitting in a kirtan in a white plastic tent in the rain. And they were very happy. And I said, 40 years ago, I was sitting in a white plastic tent in the rain chanting Hare Krishna. 40 years later, I'm doing the same thing. Now, materially, that's not progress. It's not progress. Spiritually, it's progress. But these arrangements by which we encounter devotees, and the mercy of the great devotee is Bhagavan's mercy. So imagine everything. All the avatars, all the material planets, all the incarnations of Godhead, all the expansions of Vishnu, all the Vaikuntha planets, every single one of the tens and tens of thousands of Lakshmis, the cowherd boys, the mothers of the gopis, the mothers of the cowherd boys, everybody, the entire manifestation. It's all coming from one person, all coming from Krishna. And the first expansion of the Lord is Balaram. And what does Prabhupada want us to know about Balaram? It's very simple. He's the first expansion of Krishna. He's as beautiful as Krishna. And the only difference is his color. The only difference is that Balaram is white and Krishna is blue. And Krishna is Pitambara. Krishna is Pitambara, means he wears yellow. It goes with his colouring. Everyone should wear clothes that go with their colouring. So when you're dark, blackish blue in colour, yellow looks particularly nice. And when you're whitish, then blue looks particularly nice. And so we have this understanding. So he's the same as Krishna. But his relationship with Krishna is different. Because he is different. In the sense that everybody who is an expansion of Krishna, as a relationship to Krishna, for service. Even when you're the first of the first of the first expansions of Krishna, still you are the servant of Krishna. Because there's only one Krishna. So even if you're extremely powerful, who can be more powerful than Lord Balaram himself? But Balaram is also the eternal servant of Krishna. But his service is not like any other service. First of all, his relationship with Krishna is he's always giving support. For anything that a powerful person wants to do, there's a support team. So Balaram is a support team for Lord Krishna. But he's slightly more protective of Krishna. How can he be protective of God? What does God need to be protected from? Well, Krishna is the experiencer of all rasas, including the relationship of being protected by someone. If Krishna could not experience the relationship of being lovingly protected by someone, he wouldn't be Krishna. He would be someone else. Because Krishna is the Rasa Raja. He's the experiencer of all possible relationships, including the relationship of being protected by someone. So Krishna manifests Balaram, and not just here in this world, but Krishna is manifest eternally in order to protect Krishna. And he thinks, I am protecting Krishna. Even when there's no need to think that. There is a need to think that because Krishna causes him to think like that so that that relationship can be experienced. That causation is inherent in the positioning of the relationship, which is itself an ingredient of the bhava between the Lord and his expansion. So he's also a little provocative. Balaram is a little provocative. He provokes Krishna. He does things that are sometimes provocative. Provocative means, you know, they cause Krishna to act in a way that perhaps Krishna didn't really want to act in. For example, Mother, he's eaten clay. He's eaten clay. No, really. Please believe me. He put some clay in his mouth. And then Krishna, he says, oh, you got me, drop me in it again. And then he opens his mouth. And of course, that provocation by Balaram causes something wonderful to happen. And something that thousands of years later, we still talk about. Because to see the universe in some child's mouth, that's a wonderful thing. So the fact that she saw that was through Balaram's provocation. So he provokes. It's a little bit like, you know, you get a grain of sand in an oyster, and the grain of sand is the provocation for the oyster to produce the pearl. So the pearl of Krishna's pastimes, they're often provoked by something that looks like an untoward action by an older brother, but they actually provoke a wonderful manifestation of Krishna's pastimes. Finally, because of that, Lord Balaram is slightly unpredictable. Slightly unpredictable. When you can predict something, it means A, B,
C.
Yeah, how did you know I was going to say C? How did you? How on earth? Are you like that card reader yesterday who was going around the tables? How did you know that I was going to choose the eight of whatever it was? That was quite mystical. How did he know that? I don't know how he knew. I still haven't worked it out. But that's because it's magic. So, how did you know I was going to say C? Because I started A, B, and you knew. Okay, this is a sequence. I get it. Next one in the sequence? Oh. But for Lord Balaram, there's no sequence. Because he's already on Z. While you're thinking what he should be doing is C, he's already on Z. You're thinking that Lord Balaram should come into the assembly of great sages, sit down, and listen to Romaharshan Sutta, who is, you know, nobody else but the disciple of Srila Vyasadeva. Srila Vyasadeva, every year when we worship our guru, we call it Vyasa Puja, because our guru is a representative of Srila Vyasadeva, the original compiler and deliverer of the Vedas. All of the Vedas, all of the Puranas, all of the Upanishads, all of the Vedanta Sutra, and while we're thinking about it, the four Vedas as well. That's Vyasadeva. And here's his disciple, sitting on a high seat. So Balaram, manifesting himself as an ordinary human being, what's a predictable thing? He goes in, what does he do? He sits down and he listens to a disciple of Vyasadeva. Okay, what's the predictable thing for all of you to do coming in here, and I sit on this huge cushion, towering above you, what's the predictable thing? Okay, he's a proper disciple, he must know at least something. You know, I'll stay if it's not boring. What is the predictable thing? The predictable thing is that you will also sit on a small cushion, I'll sit on a big cushion, I'll say something, you listen, and we'll all go and have breakfast. That's predictable. But not today. The predictability of breakfast just ran out. What is not predictable is, what's not predictable is that someone should rush in with a blade of grass, okay, hit me with a blade of grass, and over I fall, gushing blood profusely from my head, and die on the spot. Instantly, 9 people in the room have taken a selfie with Krithamore's corpse. I was there. I saw it. I saw Krithamore get killed by the blade of grass, and I was there. Change of status. Update. I was there. # Krithamore's dead. That's unpredictable. So that's Balaram. He comes into an assembly, Bhagavatam class is going on, there's the disciple of Srila Vyasadeva. What does he do? He waits for other people to stand up to receive him. They don't stand up to receive him. Right. He's humble. Even as a Kshatriya, he should have respected the Brahmins, right? Why should he have killed someone because he didn't stand up? That's not, it doesn't seem. Everybody is supposed to stand up to receive a person of higher stature. So if there's a higher devotee walks into the room, you stand up. Of course, in ISKCON we bow down. That's okay, it's something to do with our culture. But normally you stand up, you wait until that higher devotee sits down, and then you bow down. That's how you do it. So a person of lower rank comes in, and you just let them find their own cushion. Okay? That's how we do it. It's like, you know, the arty flame. The arty flame. And the devotee comes and he's looking around the room with sort of, you know, Terminator 2, radar vision, you know, who's the senior devotee, who's the, and then there's a bit of a panic, and he goes towards the wrong one, and then another one says, oh. He goes towards the right one, and then he gives it to a new bhakta because he didn't know who that person was, because he was visiting from Senegal. So, you know, who's high, who's low? There's one, I've got to tell you this, there's one temple in America that has 6 different cushions. All together, cushion number 1 for the ordinary devotee giving class. Cushion number 2 for the senior devotee giving class. There's 2 cushions. I'm not telling you. But Ermita told me about this, and Ermita doesn't lie. So then, anyway, it goes on until you have, you know, senior, proper disciple, ISKCON, initiating guru, Maharaj. That's the ultimate cushion. And it gets very wobbly up there. there's so many cushions they've had to fix a lightning conductor to. No, I'm just kidding. So this is unpredictable. Is unpredictable, but Balaram is doing something. He's not on C, he's on Z. So that the rest of Krishna's pastimes can manifest themselves, he's making those arrangements. Now the reason for this, so that future things might happen, is because he's the first class servant of Krishna. The bottom class servant waits for his master to say, can you bring me a glass of water? And then he brings him a glass of milk. The second class servant, he waits, you know. But the first class servant, he sees perhaps my master is thirsty, I'm going to bring him some water before he asks me. This is the top class servant. So before Krishna manifests his pastimes, Lord Balaram is out there making all the different arrangements so that when Krishna arrives, everything will happen. Yesterday, we saw an amazing example of Lord Balaram's potency, giving energy to the devotees to make everything very nice for Krishna, Lila, and Lalita. I could not believe it. Even at Bhaktivedanta Manor, we don't have that Balaram potency of making arrangements so that everything would go right. And I thought, okay, everything's going to go right except the weather. I know that Hridaya Chaitanya was here for 27 years. I know he's worshipped Radha Gopinath, but he cannot control the weather. But blimey, he was controlling the weather. He was doing incantations on top of that tower all yesterday afternoon, deep in meditation. The clouds dispersed. Indra was quaking in fear. And the sun shone on his daughter's wedding. So this is potency. So anyway, imagine Balaram's potency is to make the entire universe fit for Krishna's service. Therefore, Balaram is an expansion of Krishna. And from Balaram, according to Pancharatra, is expanded the Chatur Vyuha. Vyuha means formation. Chatur means 4. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And then from them another expansion comes. So wherever there is Narayan, there's also Sankarshan. Wherever you find Narayan, you also find Sankarshan. Wherever Narayan is worshipped, Sankarshan is worshipped. And indeed, Sankarshan is the perfect complementary aspect of Narayan. So when he is in the form of Vishnu, Sankarsana is manifested in the form of the serpent bed, Sheshanaga. This is Balaram, this is Sankarsana. So when there is puja paraphernalia for worshipping the Lord, everything including the temple itself, this is Sankarsana Balaram. Every time you lift a chamra or a peacock feather, this is none different from Sankarsana. Every time you pick up your bead bag, this is none different from Sankarsana. All the ingredients, all the samagri to worship the Lord, this is all Sankarsana Balaram. When Prahlad Maharaj was questioned, they asked him, how did you manage to survive all these terrible things that were done to you? He said, well, like what? He said, well, like the snakes. You were put in a pit of snakes. How did you manage to survive? He said, snakes. He said, no problem. He said, my father is Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan. He's my father. He sleeps on a bed of snakes. I was put in the pit of snakes. I was on the bed of my father. If a child is on the bed of his father, he has no problems, does he? That's what they were astonished. This is his vision, that everything in the universe, including the most dangerous thing in the universe, is owned and controlled by Krishna. Owned and controlled by Krishna. Isha vasyam idam sarvam. Yatkincha jagatyam jagat. He controls and owns everything. Absolutely everything. Therefore, devotional service is only available to that person who can think beyond the first two principles of religion. The first two principles of religion, the first one is karma. Karma. Everything belongs to me, or it might just possibly belong to me. I want it. I want it. I want it all. Or I want as much as I can have. Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all have Porsches. I must make amends. Lord, buy me a car and a cottage by the sea. Om Jai Jagadisha. So everybody wants something. Everybody wants a wife. Everybody wants a wife. Nice wife, beautiful wife, nicely decorated. A wife for life. Okay, this is what we want. Dear God, give me a wife for life. And some men, they want more. I will have four wives now, and 72 when I get to heaven. That's the problem. It's all right, you can have 72 when you go to heaven. You can have more. That's what heaven is for. It's for unlimited wives for at least 10,000 years. It's a good deal. It's a very good deal. Prabhupada said, most of my disciples, they simply want to go to the heavenly planets. This is the problem. Sometimes we think, at the end of this life, I'm going to go back to Godhead. And we think of rivers of nectar and celestial kalpavriksha trees. And then after 5 minutes of thinking about going to the spiritual world, we think, oh yes, Krishna. I've got to be an eternal servant, and pretty much it's going to be the same up there as it is down here, so I better work hard. But you can have these things. If you're an unintelligent karmi, using the real definition of the term, you will want everything in your youth. And that's why sometimes we see, especially as Kali Yuga progresses, we see men of 35 or 42, and they look like a dried up prune, like a dried up plum. They've used all their youthful energy. They really have. Their unit of enjoyment has gone down to a fraction of a decimal point of a unit. So those who are in Sattva-guna, or a little bit more in Sattva-guna, they want to make sure that they have enjoyment for the rest of this life. I want a long life, and a good wife, and a good car, and a good house. And those who really want, people in Sattva-guna, they make the best karmis. Because they actually believe that there's a life after this one, first of all. They actually believe that I can have a better future in the next life, or in heaven. And they plan to go there. That's pretty high stuff. So when your Sattva-guna is completely dominated by Rajaguna, you end up a evil tapasvi, like Ravana. He was an evil tapasvi. He could do tapasya that you can't even think of. I mean, we're thinking, oh my God, no breakfast, how am I going to cope? But he was there for months after months after months after months doing, you know, worshipping Lord Shiva in order that what? He could become super powerful. Hiranyakashipu was worshipping Lord Brahma month after month after month, super powerful tapasvi. We can't even conceive of fasting that long or doing penances that long, but he did. But he was a karmi. So when you say karmi, the foolish karmi, you should be thinking, these are also karmis. And then, so the karmis love everything, but the gyanis, what do? They hate everything. They hate the world. They say, no, anything which is enjoyment, stay away from me. Now this is more advanced than the karmi, but it is still material. So either you love everything or you hate everything, that's not bhakti. And bhakti, when it's mixed with a little bit of love everything, or mixed with a little bit of hate everything, and renounce everything and give up everything, that's not bhakti, that's mishra bhakti. Karma mishra bhakti, or jnana mishra bhakti, but it's mishra bhakti. Bhakti means to see everything belongs to Krishna, and I'm going to use it to serve him. That's the consciousness of Balaram. That is the consciousness of Balaram. Everything belongs to him. My job is simply to please him. Even when I'm leaning on him eternally, and if you look at the altar there, you'll see a beautiful form of Krishna with his elder brother Balaram leaning on him. You see? And he's leaning. Who can lean on Krishna? Who has permission to lean on Krishna? Okay? Can any pujari do that? Lean on Krishna? Who can lean on Krishna? No one can lean on Krishna. But Balaram leans on Krishna and it gives Krishna pleasure. Because that's their relationship. So in past times, we see that when Balaram descended in his original form, he displays all those qualities. He came within the womb of Rohini, who was the wife of Vasudeva, who was being looked after by Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. Transferred, yes. Because I knew he can do that. And, okay, so I've been lecturing you for long enough. I want now you to call out your favorite Balaram pastime. Thank you, Lucy. Feel free. Feel free to be the first person to call out your favorite Balaram pastime. We need spontaneous devotion sometimes. So then, who's got a favorite? And in describing the pastime, please describe how it gave protection, support, service to Krishna, with a hint of unpredictability. Yes. And
my favorite pastime is when Balaram rides on the back of Pralambasura.
Oh. Put your hand up if that's your favorite pastime as well. When Balaram rides on the back of Pralambasura. Very nice. Pralamba means, the very word Pralamba means separation. Separation. As in, the most separation is the Pralamba. So Pralambasura was someone who wanted to separate the cowherd boys away from Krishna. And he wanted to separate one particular cowherd boy from Krishna, and he got more than he bargained for. So this Pralambasura, he is sometimes compared to the person who takes you away from Krishna. The person who speaks in such a way, acts in such a way to diminish your association with Krishna, pulls you away. Not a good person, a Pralamba. We've all had Pralambasuras in our life, whispering in our ear. Yeah? So we have to then ask for Balaram for spiritual strength. Okay, another one. I'm not much of a Leela person, as you can understand, but there's three sections to this class, actually. We're only on the second section. So get settled into your cushion, please. Yes.
Get that, Princess.
nice and loud.
The kidnapping of Princess Rumi.
Okay. Given that you are our master orator, could you come here and tell us the story with dramatic action?
No, it's just about how he deals with Krishna. Yeah, just put it down here. Thank you.
John?
Yeah. When Lord Krishna was being chased by Rukmini when he kidnapped Princess Rukmini, so Rukmini was very angry, and he kept on shooting arrows, and Krishna had to retaliate, so he broke his bow and his arrow. So at one point, he defeated Rukmini. So then what he did, he didn't want to kill him because obviously he was the brother of Rukmini. So he thought, so he cut off half of his moustache and half of his beard, which is for a Kshatriya, you know, this is a man. So that's only like very insulting. And so Rukmini was very distraught. Is that English?
Distraught.
So then, in order to please Princess Rukmini, he was telling Krishna, this is not very good. You know, like, after all, he's now part of the family. You know, you don't treat your brother like that. But then he told Rukmini, he went over and, you know, like this, to Rukmini, to Krishna, like that. And then ultimately he told Rukmini, Jaya worships. Hari Hari Bol.
Hari Hari Bol.
Then ultimately he told Princess Rukmini, which I thought, it's my favorite line which I compose in the musical. No. So in the musical, he told Rukmini, because it's there in Krishna book, but I made it into poetry. He says, my dear Rukmini, you should be gentle, but not sentimental. All the way around. So then he
said,
you sang it, didn't you?
I sang it.
You were Balaram, no? Yeah,
well, yeah.
You sang it. You should be gentle but not sentimental. Yeah. So, you know, for me, I happen to be Balaram is my worshipful lord. Krishna is his brother too. happen to be the supreme personality of God. You know, and he has many names. You know. And Lord Balaram, he has his own gopis. It is said, but I don't know how bona fide it is, and it's in the book called Appreciating Vrindavan Dham, that in the forest of Vrindavan, where Balaram walks, then the pebbles go like, they become like moonstones. Mm-hmm. And where Radharani walks, they become like golden. Like. So whenever Balaram sees something golden there, he goes the other direction. Radharani sees moonstones, and she goes the other direction. So one thing which you were saying in the beginning of the class about between what's the relationship between Radharani and Balaram. In Paris, there were deities, just like here, but they were not on singers, they didn't have singasan around them. They were just coming like this. There was Radha Parashishvara, and there was Balaram, Subhadra, and Jagannath. And Prabhupada said, put something in between them. They shouldn't be standing next to each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that is really true. And it's it's very finer sentiments, which if you in the beginning it's all like that, but afterward it makes sense, etc. If you mature in personal consciousness. For me, Balaram, why do I like Balaram so much? Because he's such a character. And he gets angry, but he's also very merciful. The chess match. Yeah, thank you. marriage of Lord Balaram, and I was the king of Kalinga, and Arjun was Rukmini. And when I was a young devotee, they always put me down as Narada Muni, you know. But actually, to play a demon is much more fun. So 2 years ago, I remember when you played Lord Nrisingadev. You know, I was Hiranyakashipu.
I've done so many.
Yeah. No, wait, in London, as a dramatic reading.
Oh, yeah.
I was supposed to play the part of, just a small part, one of the teachers, and I ended up here on the cushion, which I never played. It was great. I was like, oh, my
God!
That was fun. The same with Rukmini, you know. So Balaram, he's very tolerant, but at one point there comes a time that that's enough. So in the part, Rukmini, so he kept his anger towards Krishna, you know. He didn't want to return to Kundina. Yeah. So he became king of a small village, maybe with 20 people. And there he said that he was the leading man there. So anyway, so because he was so... He liked his sister Rukmini so much, you know. So although he couldn't stand Krishna, just the name is. Anyway, so he betrothed his child and the son of Krishna, and the daughter. I don't know if it's daughter, son, or son and daughter. I think son and daughter. The son of, I don't forgot that one, but also the grandson of Krishna and his granddaughter, they got married. So at one point in the play, we just made it up a little just to, you know, to start it on. The king of Kalinga visits Rukmini, and Rukmini is in a bad mood. And he said, you know, why are you such in a bad mood? You know, there's a wedding tomorrow. Don't you think it's fun, you know, with all these relatives here? And Krishna, don't talk about it. So, why do you invite them here? I said, well, just to please my sister. Oh, okay, goodbye. I said, oh, Krishna, you have to do just something to something to annoy him. And then the king of Kalinga is a very slimy character, and he says, you know what? You know, we might not be able to do something really bad, but just a little pin prick. So, you know, you are very expert in playing chess, aren't you? I said, yes. And, you know, Balaram, you know, he isn't. So Balaram, so they played a game. It wasn't really chess, it was dice, actually. But for the Western world, he made it into a chess match, but it was... Kshatriyas play dice. That's why in the game of with the dice, which were Vatsukuni, they were they went on a number, which in the Mahabharata is another story. Anyway, so they play the game, and of course the first game Balaram lost, you know, and the Balaram very generous says, oh, let's play another game. So it started with 10 gold coins, maybe then 100 gold coins. Shall we play again, Balaram?
Yeah.
Of course. You know, then it came 1,000 coins. And every time Balaram lost, and he didn't like it. But it was very, you know, like a chatra, you lose, you say, well done, let's continue another play. You know, and then, you know, then what happened then? Do you remember that?
A little bit of him? No. he just carried on.
Well, anyway, so one
then
point...
Then he won and then he...
Yeah, so play. One time, Balaram won, and it was like 100,000 gold coins. So then, that's not possible, Rupi said, that's not possible. And King Kalam, no, that's not possible. No, there must be a mistake. And Rupi says, how can a simple coward win from me? You know, like very proud. And but then a voice from the sky came. You heard, Balaram is the winner of the game would be cheated. And in the play we did, the King of Colombia said, I didn't hear anything. Everyone was looking up and he said, I didn't hear anything. No, Balaram, no. He cheated. Rugby, you won! And yes, Rugby said, yes, I won! And then at that point, Rukmini and Krishna, they just came from a walk because they didn't like the tension of the, you know, like that. So they came back and they just there and, hey, no. And then Rukmini was saying, Rukmini, please! And then, you know, and then Balaram said, Rukmini, you know, I've always given you the benefit of the doubt, even when you tilted Krishna. And he said, Krishna! And he started insulting Krishna. And I said, Balaram, and now you stop. And he didn't stop. And he just took his club and he went, bang! And he killed him. So then the king of Kalinga, and that was funny. Oh, that reminds me of another guy. And the king of Kalinga, there was Bhumadev. Bhumadev, he was the king of Kalinga, and he had made a cut an orange peel in two and put them and made them round so the teeth were going like this, you know. You know, with his teeth. So when Balaram was killed, so Rukmi went,
the king of Kalinga went like, in slow motion.
Running up the stage, and then Balaram in slow motion went like, and then his teeth fell out. Lord Balaram, okay.
Yes.
So that reminded me of another performance which I haven't seen in at the manor. And at that time they were called Lord Chaitanya's Inter-Theatre. They didn't rehearse. I'm a person, if I do a play, I rehearse. Bhumadev and Sakshi Gopal, you know, they didn't learn the lines, and as we noticed in the reunion the other 2 years ago. Yeah. Anyway, so someone was reading the story and the others were acting it out without knowing the story. So they were reading the story of Dvidvida, gorilla. So at one point, the narrator says, then Dvidvida showed the gopis that his lower part of his body. So Mahavidya was playing Dvidvida right like this. So. And he showed his knees. Have you seen it? Or not? Did you? You were there?
I don't think they ever did it again.
Anyway, so that's what I continue with.
Haribol.
Haribol.
You don't have to dramatize them.
When Balaram gets angry with the Yamuna.
Ah. Yes, the Yamuna and Karshana Lila. Yeah, very important. Very important. In fact, Lord Balaram and his plow, just like he is Sankarshan and all the attributes of Lord Krishna, Lord Narayan. So then, in the same way, he has his own attributes. And you will always see the plough in the hand of Balaram. Why plough? Well, because Lord Krishna and Balaram came for two purposes, Krishi and Goraksha, cow protection and agriculture. So the symbol of Krishna is the flute, and the cows follow the flute, and the symbol of Balaram is the plough, because the plough does the farming. So you see? Two symbols are there. So Jamuna Karshana Lila, he was forcing her too. And this wasn't the only time that Balaram used his plough and his power to disturb an entire, what? What was the other time?
City.
The whole city of?
Hastinapur.
Yeah. So, in fact, dragging the Jamuna to one place is very small compared to shaking to the very foundations the city of Hastinapur. As we've heard from Paravita Prabhu, don't make Lord Balaram angry. Don't make him angry. His duty is to protect the status quo of everyone's relationship with Krishna, either to introduce them to it or protect them from falling away from it. That's why, traditionally, Balaram Jayanti is a day when we also talk about spiritual strength and how to protect ourselves from leaving the position of the servant. If you know this song, please sing it with me. In the forest of Taran, Lord Krishna and Balaram killed the Dhenukasura by whirling him around and around. Okay, all together. In the forest of Taran, Lord Krishna and Balaram killed the Dhenukasura by whirling him around and around. So many songs, you see. Now, if I hadn't learned that song, I would have heard, which forest was it? There's 12 of them. Is it Andiravan or Lohavan? I can't quite remember that. Because I know the song. So there should be a song to fix everything in your mind. Well, if you go to the place of Lord Balaram's Rasalila, and as Parvati Prabhu said, he has his own Rasalila in Vrindavan, in the middle season.
With his own
gopis under the beautiful Purnima moon, beautiful harvest moon, then even today you will go and you will see a beautiful little temple on the bank of the moon. This place is called Ramgat. Ramgat. There are three Rams. There is Rohini Nandan Ram, Jamadagnya Ram, and Raghupati Ram. These three Rams. At different times Prabhupada was asked, when we say Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari, which does it indicate? He said, all. So then you will go and you'll see it's a beautiful little temple. And I don't know whether you saw, can anyone tell me who's not a pujari and who doesn't live here, what was the mystery object that was on the altar, that is only on the altar for this particular festival? But if you don't live here, and if you're not grown up in the Hare Krishna movement,
two of that,
because that's a giveaway. That is, yes, person who didn't grow up in the Hare Krishna movement. The Varuni, the jugs of Varuni beverage,
What's Varuni?
Varuni is the honey drink, the madhu drink, or we would say mead, madhu. So this drink, Lord Balaram drinks, and he becomes quite inebriated. It's his pleasure. But today, when I went on the Vrindavan Parikrama, if you go to the inside a little temple, you will see Lord Balaram with his two wives. Revati and Varuni. Okay. Got it? Is that right?
This is not that. Varuni.
No, Revati.
Revati.
Yeah, Revati.
Right. So then, you have Lord Balaram, who's got a little pot. And every day, the pujari fills that pot with honey. So the Mahaprasadam from that temple is quite interesting. Where do they get nice honey in Vrindavan? And they look like this. They pointed me to the tree just outside Balaram's temple was the biggest beehive I've ever seen. It was sort of, you know, as big and as wide as that door. Huge. Just thousands upon thousands upon thousands of bees. And whether the honey came from that beehive, it was huge. And it was rather interesting, the juxtaposition of beehive and beehive harvest lover Lord Balaram in the same place. It's kind of interesting, so made an impression on me. Anyway, if you look at, I don't know whether it's coincidental, but if you look at Lord Balaram's earring today, you'll see it's in a particular shape. And to me, it just looked like a beehive. Not a western beehive, but an eastern beehive. Which is a natural organic
He also wears only one earring.
Yes, one earring. Thank you.
Are we okay so far? Yeah. You got room for another 7 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that all right? There wasn't a very loud...
Yes.
Okay, all right. So we talked about the chess match. Thank you so much, Prabhupada. We talked about Govinda Gorilla. We won't go there. We talked about killing Brahmaharshan Sutta with Kushagras. When Hridaya Chaitanya yesterday was doing the, you know, the as the devotees like to call it, the coconut worship, as if we worship coconuts, we are asking none other than Lord Balaram to come into the coconut and bless married couple. How do we do that? So Hridaya Chaitanya was holding the Kushagras wand, magic wand. You can make God appear in a coconut. What we do is we ask, and if God is pleased with the Yajaman and all his years of devotion service, I sure hope he is, because looking after this wonderful temple and making it what it is today is a wonderful service for Lord Balaram. So then that was Kushagras. So Kushagras is produced from the shaking of the hairs of Lord Varaha when he's dispatched Hiranyaksha. He shakes it. So from the hairs of Lord Varaha falls, and then Kushagras grows. Kushagras is always used as a pure thing. So Lord Balaram is taking something which was none other than himself, the samagri for yajna, for worshipping Krishna, and using that as the purest possible weapon to kill Brahmaharshan Sutta. Anyway, eventually, please tell me, put your hand up. The first person to put your hand up for this gets a sweet, okay? After lunch. Okay? Lord Balaram's weapon on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was?
He didn't.
Rasa Mandala, you put your hand up?
He didn't fight.
Ah, okay. Yes. He didn't fight. Why didn't he fight?
No. He had some affection for the followers.
Yeah.
He always did.
Yeah.
Thank you to answer.
You would think that he would, you know, well, they said, the sages said, oh, you killed Brahmaharshan Sutta. The only way you can be free from your sins is to go on pilgrimage and bathe in all the holy rivers. So it just so happened that he skipped out on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is interesting, which is very interesting. So, and Lord Krishna, in one sense, he also didn't take part. You could say that he did, but he looked after the horses. We sometimes say that Lord Krishna was the chariot driver of Arjuna, and that's true, but he was more than that. The position of chariot driver also meant that you couldn't eat that night until you had looked after the horses. So you had to wipe the horses down, you had to serve food to the horses, make sure they had a fresh bed of straw, then you could go and have your... So it was a sudra position. But it was a kshatriya sudra. It was a sudra that was attached to a kshatriya. So it's not just that Krishna was, you know, on the battlefield and he was there, and they were kind of... Krishna took a position, a very lowly position, with his... eternal devotee Arjuna. So, yesterday, when we were reading out Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu's seven generations, going all the way back to 1750, were you there, any of you?
Mm-hmm.
You were there, you were all there. Okay. Set the branches, they were chanting Hare Krishna very loudly in the forest. Maya. So, we don't have brahmacharis like that anymore now. We went through the family tree. And in all these family trees, we find there's a similarity between the person today, and if you were to go back, because it's the same genetic code, you would find certain physical similarities.
you'd find certain predispositions. When you have children, mystery of mysteries, they look a bit like you, and they look a bit like your partner. And you spend the first 2 years of your child's life sorting out which one's got his mother's eyes, which one's got his father's ears, etc., etc. And this we shouldn't find very surprising, because it's been set up by nature that as you give birth to something, that something will be quite similar. So as Lord Balaram gives birth to an expansion and an expansion and an expansion, we find that there are similarities. So when you see Lord Nityananda, you also find that he's older than Lord Chaitanya. He also, his pastimes act as a support for Lord Chaitanya. He's protective. He's complementary to the Lord's mission of spreading and tasting the holy name. And he's also slightly unpredictable. Slightly unpredictable. And that's for Nityananda's appearance today. But you know the stories of swimming with the crocodiles and turning up naked to Mother Sachi's house. And, you know, so many pastimes. So he's slightly unpredictable. So the manifestations of reproduction are either genetic or spiritual. These continue. And I wanted to just say something about that, because we also do that with our Sangha, with our association. I'm on the last 5 minutes now, I'm going to let you go. The last 5 minutes, we do that with our Sangha. As we are, we choose friends. As Lord Krishna is surrounded by a constellation, if you like. He's the sun, and he's surrounded by many, many star-like, you know, eternal associates. He manifests them all. He manifests them all, and they're all in relation to him. So we, as miniature potentials of Krishna, we surround ourselves with people who are, in a sense, expressions of ourself, whether they are children, whether they are friends, circles of friends. We choose them carefully so that they reflect back to us. And we do so for pleasure. Krishna is surrounded by so many manifestations of his Kundalini Shakti, chief of which is Srimati Radharani. This is all for Krishna's pleasure. Why? Because he's the Param Purusha. He's the supreme enjoyer. And everybody, every single living being is for his pleasure. Well, in our mayic condition, we also surround ourselves with persons who we think will support us and give us pleasure. So as our consciousness of what constitutes pleasure changes, our circle of friends changes. And so the person who wants to be a religious person but wants to maximize his enjoying potential in this world or in the next life, he or she surrounds themselves with persons who are just like them. So we normally find that religion is pretty much like a tribe. There's a level of consciousness and a level of motivation which becomes reproduced in the association that a person chooses. So all the people who are looking at Krishna or Balaram, and I have seen them, for material purposes, they will worship him for those purposes. I was in Ahobalam, the place in South India, which is the appearance place of Lord Sri Narasimhadev. And I saw a few Muslim men and their wives, and their wives were completely dressed in burqas, which means that only the eyes were visible and everything else was black cloth. And they were walking along the road to the temple of Lord Narasimhadev. And I said, excuse me. I said, well, I tried not to look that surprised. I tapped one of the men on the shoulder. I said, excuse me, salam alaikum. He said, salam alaikum, alaikum salam. Well, he didn't actually say it like that, but apparently he was in front of me, so I thought it. So I said, could you tell me, you know, is it a mosque? He said, no mosque. I said, no singer? Koi? Oh, something new. Koi? And he
They said, yes. I said, why are you all going with your wives up to see Lord Shingle? And he just went, like that, so that the wife can become pregnant. Anyone who has difficulty conceiving, any woman who has difficulty conceiving, goes to worship Lord Shingle. There you are, that's a secret. I bet you didn't know that. So here was these Muslims on a journey, going to see a god that they don't believe in. Because they've understood that that god works, even if their god doesn't. And what a stretch. If I was quick and I had an iPhone, I would have taken a picture. Because that would have been a very interesting picture. All these burkas going to see Lord Shingle. But the principle is not bhakti yoga. The principle is, I want something. They've told me that if I go to this special place, I will get some, you know, grace of Allah, who's appearing in that form there. Although I'm not quite sure, but, you know, my wife will become pregnant. So this was very interesting for me. So people who are materially bold, I was walking around Govardhan Hill, and I saw a very nice husband and wife, elderly gentleman and lady. He was doing full dandavats, and every time he did full dandavats, she took a speck of dust from his feet, and she put it in a little tin with a handle. She was walking behind him, and they'd obviously been walking for miles because they were covered in dust. She took a little speck from his bottom of his feet and put it in a tin. And then he stood up, paid dandavats again, in the hot sand. She took a speck of dust from his feet, put it in a tin. And I thought, what a manifestation of pure devotional service. I could never do this. And I said, so me being me, I said, what are you doing it for? And she said, oh, our son is having doctor's exams. And we're doing this so that he will pass his exams. Now, is it devotional service?
Kind of.
Kind of, isn't it? But it's
unknowingly.
It's sort of karma mishra bhakti. Because it's devotion, but it's not pure, I want something, you see. And so, anyway, we associate ourselves with people like that if we're like that. Birds of a feather?
Flock together.
They flock together, they do. So, in our devotional life, we are meant to move forward in devotional service by the power of association. Now, here's the difficult part. The easy part is to find friends who are devotees, who are just like us. That's easy. That's the easy part. Because especially those friends will make you feel comfortable being a devotee on the level that you are now. But to find a friend who, like Balaram, is a little provocative, a little unpredictable in what they say to you sometimes, a little bit, squeezes you a little bit, then you found someone who is representing Balaram's potency in your life. Why? Because Balaram represents the guru potency. So, leaving aside, you know, Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, and all that, we need people who are going to just prod us just a little bit with their words or by their association. We need them. And failure to have that sort of person in our life means that we run the risk of being a little comfortable. You see, because the tendency is that when we get comfortable, we find junior friends. We find people who are the people that we can help. Nothing wrong in that, and I think each and every one of us should have people that we can help, because that's also us being, you know, the teacher for them. But you run the risk then of, if you're only surrounding yourself with people who think you're, wow, you really know what you're talking about, you really helped me so much, you know, the cushions underneath your bottom start being added to, and you get very wobbly. The more cushions, the more wobbly. Okay? And one day you will fall off that pile of cushions. So it's better to be, if you want to be as humble as a blade of grass, it's better to be somewhere near the grass. So, and if you want to offer respects to all others and expect no respect in return, it's good to be in a situation where you can train that humility muscle. The guru muscle, sure, we should all train that as well. We should all be teachers of someone, but we should also be students of someone. We should all prod someone in their life, but we should also be prodded. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to ask you on this Balaram's appearance day, who is there in your life, and you don't have to tell me now, it's a bit of homework for you, who is there in your life who is your friend, and hopefully you've got more than one, and hopefully you've got someone who's not an imaginary friend, or a digital friend, or a robotic friend, or a virtual friend, or a Facebook friend. But hopefully you've got a real friend made of flesh and blood and all these things who can actually talk to you. Now, both the American Association for Psychology and the Anthropology Convention teamed up to talk about how we do this sort of friendship business. And there were some very interesting statistics which seem to be borne out by scientific research, because sociologists, people who study the way society works, and anthropologists, the way people behave in groups and tribes and clans in history and in different cultural settings, geographical settings, it's nonetheless science. Nonetheless science, no less than chemistry or botany. But what it does, it studies how people move in circles of people. And it's very interesting. And it's borne out by something that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said and something which we all said. And it is that we have a circle around us of intimates. Circle of intimates. 5 people, 6, 7 people. People who, you know, in times of physical pain, or in times of emotional distress, or in times of poverty, or in times of danger, these are the people that we return to first. Around them, so imagine a concentric, so we just did this as an exercise in Slovenia, and we're not going to dramatize it now, but we got members of the audience to come forward and be the circle for one poor chap. And turns out actually that he was a devotee with no friends. He lived in a far off part of Slovenia. And by the end, he was in tears because the exercise had him sitting on a chair, being surrounded by concentric circles of friends, and at the end we all held hands and we said, "We are here for you. We support you. We will be here for your life." And he just... So 5, a circle of 5. Who are they? You take a sheet of paper. Not now. Later. This is all to do with Bhagavan. Take a sheet of paper. Who are these people who are supportive, protective, and maybe slightly unpredictable, because they're carrying the guru potency in your life? Who are they? And we find sometimes that if a person is too much with their disciples or their students or new people, we just find that they don't. So Prabhupada created the temple system, and when I was a kid, everybody lived in these things called temples, and there was about 15 people, 20 people average. A big temple in Islam, sort of 60, but there was only 6 of them. You know, Los Angeles, New York, London, Chicago, Bombay, and Mayapur. And in Mayapur, at one time, only had 20 devotees. Imagine that. 20 devotees in Mayapur. Now, try and count them, can you? Even they don't know how many are there. So, 5 people. Then around that, 15 people. These are friends who you may not pick up the phone and call them immediately, but they are people in your life. They are friends, and you speak to them regularly. These are people with whom it's worth maintaining the relationship. It's worth maintaining the relationship because of what they can contribute to your life in a substantial way. Around them is 30, and these are colleagues. Colleagues. You know them at work, you know them perhaps in the ISKCON movement, perhaps they're colleagues. They're not your closest intimate friends,
you couldn't really call them your friends, but the people that you might, Harold, and they've been there for years, and you've been there for years, but you never actually sat down and had a discussion with them. Some of them may be hidden gems. Some of them may be just the people that you need to talk to knock you down a cushion or two. But some of them you may be avoiding for that precise reason. They may be the people that you don't want to talk to because you're worried that they will suffer. So that's the 30. And that can be a company or an association or society. Around that, interesting enough, is 150. Between 147, say the scientists, I'm very precise, between 147 and 150 is your village. And these are the people who are, they're like you, they either look like you, speak like you, dress like you, there's some common factor, they live in the same place as you, and they have the same sort of goals in life, and sometimes you can work together. It's part of the way in which you can survive as a person. And they've done research in South American villages, and they don't go beyond 147, 150. And they've done research in Canada and in communities, Christian communities, that deliberately, for the past 400 years, have split off at either 120 or 150, absolute maximum. They've been doing it for 400 years, and the fact that we know that is because they've survived for 400 years. So the Amish and the Hutterites and the Mennonites, they've done these things. So then what Christian communities have started doing is taking huge communities, please bear with me because you'll see where I'm going with this, huge communities of a congregation of 2,000, and they've had problems because they were so enthusiastic and so inspired when they first discovered the Lord Jesus Christ, and now everybody seems a bit unenthusiastic. So what is the problem? Is it a southerner? Well, they didn't use the word southerner. Is the southerner a problem? Is it the Bible that's the problem? Is it, do we have to provide more, dramas and, playing guitar and all these kind of different gadgets and things that they might do to spice up Christianity a little bit? And eventually they came down to what it was. They split the community, the 2,000, into groups of no more than 150, and they split the 150 into groups of 15. You could choose to be where you were within reason. And the effect was amazing. The effect was amazing. It was a complete transformation. So, my request to you is that you pray to Lord Balaram for spiritual strength on this, his Purnima. But, remember the guru principle. Remember the support principle. Remember the protective principle. Remember the unpredictability principle. And try and see who's in your groups. If you don't have a group to belong to, you may not actually be a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. You may just be living in a building with a lot of other people hopping, skipping, and jumping around you with happy, smiling faces, but that's not good enough. It's not good enough. But now, only 5% of the sum total population of devotees lives in temples. In 3 weeks ago, in Moscow, they just celebrated their 100th group. Their 100th group in Moscow. There are now 7,000 devotees in Moscow. Not one of them, right? So, 15 or 20 of them are brahmacharis who live in the temple, but not much more than that. So, where do the other 6,000 and 900 live? 6,900. Where do they live in Moscow? Well, they live in things called, are you ready? Houses. They live in houses, but they worship together in groups. They worship together in groups. And they just make sure that no group goes beyond 15. So you get the human dynamism within the group. You actually get to talk to people, and you make yourself a little bit vulnerable so that people can talk to you. And if they're not all friends, some of those people in your group will say things to you like, you know the thing that you did there? That wasn't very Christian conscious, was it? What do you mean? I'm a senior devotee, you can't talk to me like that. Everybody's a senior devotee. We're all senior devotees now. We're all senior devotees. Simultaneously, we're all junior devotees. We can't compare ourselves to the last person that walked into the temple and took up a bee bag. We'll always be feeling that we are greater than everybody. And we look around the temple room and we'll think, I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. I'm better than him. I'm better devotee than him. Better devotee than him. Him. And her, for sure. Definitely her. And we go and we think, pretty much I'm the best devotee. Well, I'm the best devotee is the thought that you have just before you lose your status as a devotee. You're out the door. Most devotees who have left the company of devotees at some point had that thought, I'm the best devotee. So better, and we're not talking here about, you know, sort of, we're not talking about excruciating loss of self-respect or being divested of any scrap of, you know, real understanding of who you are or positivity, but a natural humility serves you very well. To think, actually, I don't know that devotee yet. I think I do, but I haven't really penetrated who that devotee is and what fresh understanding they may have of devotional service that they can share with me. Therefore, the question that Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says that every devotee must ask every other devotee is, he says, my dear Prabhu. Okay? Say it, please.
My dear Prabhu.
Please tell me.
Please tell me.
What enlivens you?
What enlivens you?
In devotional service.
In devotional service.
To the Lord.
To the Lord.
How do you serve him?
How do you serve him?
What do you serve him with?
What do you serve him with?
And what are your feelings as you serve him?
And what are your feelings as you serve him?
If everybody asked everybody else that question, what a wonderful world. It would be wonderful, you see. There's two ways that you can live as a devotee. One way is to try and protect yourself, which really means to protect your ego. Protecting the ego means never letting anybody in who could ever tell you that anything about what you have or what you are is less than perfect. These types of devotees never get initiated. In fact, they never have friends who make them vulnerable. But they try to draw to them friends who will always flatter them. That's a very dangerous position. So as soon as possible, or if not sooner, we have to get into that position where we are allowing people to tell us things about ourselves that may be uncomfortable. Preferably not all on the same day. You know, that's my dear Lord. You know, I need to know these things, but, you know, just slowly. So this is our prayer today. And if you ask the Lord for protection, and ask the Lord to send you someone who will very quickly point out what you need to know. It is painful, but it is gainful. It is gainful. You will gain from it. And work out who's in your 5, who's in your 15. Write it down on a piece of paper. It's not your Facebook friends. Please take that from me. It's nice to sort of think that you have 900 friends, but I just want to tell you, they're not really 900 friends. They're just people that you clicked on. So friends are people that you can trust. You will look after you and maybe tell you things that you need to know. So who's in your 5, who's in your 15, who's in your 30? And who, if you can be so introspective, is who's in your 150? Because these are the people who will turn up at your funeral. I've done a lot of funerals. I did a funeral just before coming here, not in Slovenia, but before going to Slovenia. And it was a man who'd lived, you know, a long time. And I would say that I would be a little disappointed, and I will be a little bit disappointed with all of you, if I don't see you at my funeral. Because there just wasn't many people. For a lifetime of friendship, not many people came. And that's a great shame. So we should all live our lives in such a way that when we finally pass away from this earth and we hear, oh, such and such Prabhu is gone. I just got to stop what I'm doing. I've got to be there. Got to go to the funeral. Should be like that. It should be so many people, at least 150, that they can't get in. And there's one outside the door who came to the funeral and is standing there like that. No, I was number 151. He never let me in. It's an English joke. So, Balaram, you win some, you lose some. Today's Balaram Jayanti is a wonderful Purnima. If you want to know more about Lord Balaram, Paravita is here. He has promised that he will do a few more plays, or one-man play, after breakfast. Oh, excuse me, there's no breakfast. What a pity. Just to make you feel good, there is no breakfast. But you all ate so much yesterday. Well, stuffed tomatoes, cucumbers, raclette. Oh, it is. And I just got to say, the man who channeled Balaram's potency to create the magnificent feast, he's here. And I'd like you to salute him. Let us all salute him. You were in the kitchen chanting. Shopping and cure to them. Chopping and cooking. Hare Krishna. Shri Rabaki. Shri Balaram.